Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight has 25 plus years of developing / renovating commercial real estate in Rust Belt cities. He invested $8 million of his own money and led the $190 million renovation of the Book, the Westin Book Cadillac. He literally willed this project to completion, and he believes that our best days are ahead of us. He's the chairman and CEO of the Furchill Group. His name, John Furchill. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible, presented by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Rasula on News Talk 760 WJR. Brought to you by Trust in Us, a world-class executive search firm. Now here's Jack.
Welcome. We're with the man who gave us the book back, John Furchill. John, thanks for doing that and welcome.
Thank you, Jack, for enjoying being here.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your parents?
I was born and raised in a little town in mid-Ohio, it's New Philadelphia, which had about 14,000 people in the town. I think it's grown to that. I think I grew up there. It was 10,000 people there, and it's the only way anybody would read it from Michigan would know about it. It would be because it came. It's close to the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and the Pro Football Hall of Fame is in Canton, Ohio, which is about 25 miles from New Philadelphia. So, I grew up there, and my mother was one of 13 brothers and sisters, and my father was 11, so there were 24 of them, and I was actually the first child to go off to college, which is kind of interesting, and it's hard to believe with the personality I have that I have an electrical engineering degree from a little school in Cleveland called Fenn College, which eventually became Cleveland State University, and that's how I ended up in the big city of Cleveland, and so it's been a great ride.
What's the biggest thing you learned from your mom, and what's the biggest thing you learned from your dad?
My mother is a classic Italian matriarch. She's still alive. She's 96 years old and still runs everybody in the family, What I learned from my mother was, you know, you got to be a good person, and she is an incredible human being, handles everybody yet today, takes care of everybody, takes care of even my grandchildren, my own grandchildren she has relationships with, so she's just a great people person. And my dad was a very, very bright guy. He used to always tell me, Mom's run my life all my life, I let her continue to do that, and we just kind of, it was all about family, it still always is about family with us.
John, how did you ever get into the real estate development and management business?
When I graduated from what was then Cleveland State University, I actually searched for a job that I could not use electrical engineering because I knew that my personality would never fit in that. And I ended up going to work for the phone company. And I was with the phone company for 4 or 5 years where I had met my wife, who at that time was only 21 years old. And we got married in less than a year, 1 year later, and she is exactly the opposite of me. She's a very laid-back, classy lady, doesn't say too much. But when I did a project, or I left the phone company to go to work for a development guy because he had left the phone company, I learned the development business at that time from that company, which I was there for 3 or 4 years, and then the company went bust in those bad days of the 70s and 80s when the interest rates were 20%. And I went to work on one of the projects that I had developed. And when the project got done and completed and redeveloped, which they told me would take about 6 months to a year, it actually took 4 years. And I sold it to a guy who became a legend, Sam Zell. And I went to Chicago to talk to Zell about going to work for him, didn't think the culture fit. And this very quiet, low-key lady who I was married to, and we had 3 children at the time, says, why don't you start a real estate development company? Because you were smarter than everybody else you had always been dealing with. So at 35 years old and $25,000, I started a real estate development company.
Talking about your wife, Sharon, can you take us back 25 years ago, 1983, you and your wife, Sharon, lose your 9-year-old, joy of your life, little Jenny.
Yeah. We had, at the time that when Jenny was a very active, she was the third child of four, and she was the third girl of three girls. The three girls came first, and then my son Christopher, who at the time when Jenny died was 6 years old. Jenny was the most active of the girls, and, you know, the bubbly one, the outgoing one, and of course everybody would say Dad's favorite because she was the youngest girl. And Jenny, we don't know what happened. We just assume that when she was playing in a swimming pool one day, she got hit in the face by a rubber ball, just like kids do all the time. And we still firmly believe, have no basis for this, but she contracted a brain tumor, and which almost everybody assured us was a non-malignant brain tumor. And lo and behold, the day they went in to operate on her, they come out and said, it's malignant, and we don't have any way to, because the tumor was on her stem cell, and we have no way to save her. I spent probably with my wife, we spent the next 6.5 to 9 months trying to find a cure for Jenny, and pretty well made up our mind that we couldn't do it. And one of the things that I tell people who come to talk to me about their child dying is that you have to justify in your own mind what you did. And I justified that I did everything I could to save my daughter. It is the worst single thing that can ever happen to a human being. Everybody knows that. Everybody talks about that. But until you experience it, it is the worst human being thing you could ever do. And under those circumstances, that's what probably made me in this family, when everybody talks about how tough I am, you've never been through anything tougher than that.
They say that it's the hardest thing on a marriage is to lose a child.
Right.
If there's a couple out there listening tonight that's gone through that recently and their marriage is on the rocks, what do you tell them, John?
90% of the people who lose a child get divorced. And what it does is it manifests all the other problems, whether you got a money problem or whether you have a relationship problem or whether you have a education problem. It all manifests itself in that. And the only chance of survival is you got to hang together. Everybody says, you guys did a great job, and all I kept saying was, we just want to stay alive. And I hung on to my kids, and my wife was a real glue to the thing. And you met her, Jack. You know what kind of human being she is. And that kind of really told everything. And without her, she took care of this child every day. And, you know, and today, of course, we have huge problems in this world with everybody. But the only chance you got to survive in this is you got to hang to your family, and that's it.
We're talking to John Furchill, and I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Brought to you by Trust in Us, a world-class executive search firm. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. We're with John Furchill. And in the last 25, the Furchill Group has acquired, developed, or redeveloped $1.3 billion in real estate assets in Cleveland, Akron, Buffalo, New York, Pittsburgh, and now Detroit. John, why did you come to Detroit?
Well, when we were working in Cleveland, where we had been, and they had a new dynamic black mayor by the name of Mike White, and he and I and a few other people pushed through getting the baseball stadium and the basketball arenas built in downtown Detroit, and the Cleveland Indians started their great run through the 90s, it became very evident to me that if you put a ballpark up, people would come. It didn't make any difference if the city had been abandoned. It didn't make any difference of that. But when they all came there, it just vibrated the city beyond belief, and that's exactly what happened. So the mayor was there. Mike White was there for 12 years. And he was a great mayor for the first 8 years, and somehow he got sideways on the last 4 years, And him and I had a falling out, so we decided we didn't have any choice but to follow the ballpark. So we went to Pittsburgh and Detroit, where they were building new ballparks. And we looked around in those ballparks to find a hotel site, because we had been so successful with a Hampton Inn in downtown Cleveland. And of course, the first project we did in Detroit was the Hilton Garden Inn, which is, as you know, in Harmony Park and near Comerica Field and Ford Field and Comerica Park. So and it's been, frankly, a very successful project. And so that's why we first ended up in Detroit. But when we came here, our real forte was we were historic rehab experts. And that's what led us to the book. And in fact, Brian Holwick, with the DEGC, brought over a report from a local architect engineering firm that said we should tear down the book Cadillac. And he asked me to take a look at the report. And I said, could you get me in the building? And I walked through the building, and it was so bad, Jack, that we were actually shoveling stuff. They were shoveling stuff in front of me, and I had to sign a document that said if I died of asbestos, they weren't responsible. But I walked through the building and told him the report was not correct and that he should hire a different engineer. I gave him the name of an engineer. He hired him and got the correct report, and the engineer was really based on structural issues. It wasn't anything else. There was nothing else to save in the building. And that was my first encounter of the book Cadillac Hotel. And I knew about the iconic status of it, but, you know, and I just kind of went on my way. It was opening or finishing the Hilton Garden Inn, and just always assumed that the book would, eventually they would talk to me about it. And one day I picked up the newspaper here in Detroit, and there it was, that they had hired another developer. And I just kind of said, okay, enough's enough. And I thought it was a very interesting conversation. George Jackson called me very sheepishly and said, you know, John, you know, I hope you're not upset. And I said, no, I'm not worried, George. I said, you'll be back. And that's what happened.
Can you walk? You led this effort. You willed this to happen. $190 million effort, renovation. Can you walk us through the book Cadillac today?
Yeah, I'll walk you a little bit through the financing, but the more interesting story is what happened after. So the financing started with, we had automatically assumed that we could assemble a lot of historic credit money and historic, which was all cash to the deal. And it took us literally within weeks to get somewhere between 30 and $50 million worth of equity raised by credits and stuff like that. And the original budget that George had given us was a $20 million deficit, and we could make that up immediately, which we did. And then we went through the development process of just doing the drawings and all the rest of that, which took us over a year to do. And while all that was going on, we were assembling financing money, never concentrating on the first mortgage, because we thought if we had enough equity in the deal that nobody would bother us, we'd get a first mortgage easily. And it turned out to be false that after we had raised over $140 million, we couldn't find a first mortgage for $50 million. And eventually we found it through a company out of New York called iStar. And that was how all the money came. It was hard to imagine watching all these things. One day it would go in, one day it'd come back out. One day we'd have $2 million from one place. Like I remember getting $2 million from the county, and the next day the county cut it back to $1 million, and all those things went on and on. And you know, my personality is that I am just one of the most mentally tough human beings you'll ever meet. And once I set my mind to this is going to get done, and everybody's given me all the accolades, but this is really was a tremendous team effort by these guys that worked for me, who are very bright guys, and they knew how to keep all everything on track. And that's how we came together with the project. And once that financing got done, and we went to construction, we really had relatively little problems with the construction aspects of it. Absent just kind of getting approvals and all that stuff from the city and all that, it was really a relatively construction-free, construction problem-free project. And so it, you know, it went very well. And then at the end, the product was frankly way better than we ever anticipated. And it actually was so good that I couldn't even comprehend how it turned out. And and more importantly, the effect it had on Detroiters. You know, I would watch people walk through this place. I watched people cry. I'd watch people stop me and say, you know, I had my wedding here. I mean, one of my favorite stories, there are six ladies sitting in the what is now the motor bar, and these ladies aren't people who frequent a bar. And one of them walked over with a D Business article and asked me if I would. No, she walked over with her receipt of her wedding night, of her receipt from the hotel for her wedding night, and she would ask me to sign it. And I said, I don't want to do that. But I went and got her a D Business article and signed that for her. And she was the only woman of the six women there that was married. The other five were nuns, which I immediately recognized because I had grown up being taught by nuns. And a woman goes, how did you know I was a nun? And I said, you see the pin? And she goes, oh, you had nuns teach you all your life. And I said, yes, I did. So, and those women were so excited about being there. They had been to the book when it was the book, and they had been there, and the woman had gotten married there and all the rest of that. It was just really, and those experiences go on forever with me. I mean, people stop me, guy, four or five older Italian guys came in one day and with the map of Italy on her face, and, you know, they go, you're a pretty smart Italian kid, aren't you? And we laughed about it and stuff like that. So it was really, it's been great. And people told me story after story about their experience with the book. The book Cadillac is a special thing in the heart of everybody in Detroit. It's just so evident.
It's part of the fabric of the history of the city.
Yeah, it's kind of where they, as somebody said in one of those promotions, where they celebrated the Halcyon Days of Detroit. And it was a great experience.
I've traveled a lot. I've been lucky. You stay at the Regis in New York City. That's $1,000 a night. Mm-hmm. That hasn't got anything on the book. You stay at the Peninsula in Chicago. I mean, friends, this is a world-class hotel. You've said that Weston says this is one of the five top that they got. I'd like to see the four that are better than this.
Yeah, it's. I had a huge running war with Weston when we were getting ready to close the project, open a project, and they were absolutely convinced I was not going to get an occupancy permit, and they didn't want to bring their whole training team in. And me being me, I just browbeat them to death. And eventually they all showed up I showed up for the initial training session. They asked me to give the first talk. I did to all the people were there, which was a wonderful, and there was 275. It is probably the most signature moment I've had in this hotel, to see 275 people there looking for a new job. It was just a great, and all these guys with suits are in the back, and I have no idea who they all are. And so I walked back after one of the gentlemen waved for me to come over, and they all introduced me, and each one of them was telling me how I had sworn at every one of them over the last week and a half because I was going to get this thing open, and they were objecting to it. And they sat me aside and said, we want you to know this. We think this is probably going to be the best Westin in the United States and certainly one of the top five in the world. That was a great feeling.
We're talking to John Furchell, and I'm Jack Crisula, and this is Anything Is Possible, presented by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Presented by Trust in Us, a world-class executive search firm. Now, here's your host, Jack Crisula.
We're talking to John Furchell, who he and his team willed the book back to life. John, 31-story hotel, 64 luxury condos, 453 hotel rooms. Most of the condos are sold. Who's bought them?
It's really an eclectic mix of people. They go from the young single guy and gal who have had a very successful business, and they have either sold it or they are operating it, and they want to be in the middle of the action, which they think that's what's going to happen in downtown Detroit, to the person who has made a lot of money, and him and his wife are either downsizing or they are just getting a second place where they want to be, and because they have a place in Florida or some other warm weather climate. And then the third person there is just somebody who wants who's got a lot of money and just wants to have a second place downtown because he's always wanted to live in downtown Detroit. But more importantly, he's always wanted to be involved in the book Cadillac. The biggest single sales tool we have is the book Cadillac.
Yes.
Yes.
Some would say, wait a minute, you can't walk outside at night. What amenities do you offer these people?
Well, it's you really literally don't have to leave, but I'll talk a little bit about outside in a minute, but you really don't have to leave. You got a gym, you got a spa, you got a swimming pool, you've got a concierge service. I mean, if you're flying in from someplace and you tell them, go get my dog, they will bring it to you. Or if you're flying in and tell them, stock my refrigerator and here's what I want in, or go get my clothes. It's basically, you never have to leave. You get 100% service. You walk in valet and you're and then they clean your room, they take care of it. It's just like living in a hotel. But it's really just your home. It's really that nice.
Talk to us about the roast.
Yeah, the roast was an incredible coup on our part. It's just wonderful for us. I mean, even though what had happened is we really, in the beginning, had a lot of interest from various different chain food places, and we were only interested in the steakhouse because there is no steakhouse, if you think about it, of any renown in downtown Detroit. So that's what we were looking for. Andiamo's was a great restaurant. Selden Blues has done very good. But we wanted a big-time steakhouse. And at the end of the day, every steakhouse chain turned us down because it was Detroit. It was the same reason why we couldn't get first mortgage financing. It was downtown Detroit. My son Chris had just finished a deal within the last year with the Iron Chef, Michael Simon, who at the time was not an Iron Chef when Chris finished it. So he said, Dad, I'm just going to go talk to Michael. If we got this money to spend, we might as well go see if we can convince Michael to come to Detroit. So he and Michael's wife Liz and Michael's partner Doug Petrovic, they all came to Detroit, spent the weekend. Chris kind of waltzed them around for the whole weekend. And Michael said, I got a good feel for this. This is Cleveland on steroids. It's about twice or three times the size of Cleveland. And so this is a place where, we're going to open our first Iron Chef restaurant. We want to be able to get to it. We want to be able to watch it. And it was tremendous to get Michael. It was unbelievable. I had no idea of the impact of it until he did it. And then I had no idea what happened after it opened. And here's what I mean by both those things. The first was, you know, when we hold a press conference, there'll be five people there and it'll get shown and it'll probably reach 250,000 people. Now, Michael and I have a press conference to announce roast and there's 125 people there and it reaches 2.3 million people. And I go, man, this television stuff works, this Food Network thing and all the rest of that stuff. But the more important thing is, I mean, I was at Afterglow last night talking to those people. I had at least four people ask me if I could get them in roast because they could not get in the restaurant. I, honest to God, made phone calls right there at the spot and got them in. Roast has never done less than $3.5 to $4 million restaurant the first week out of the box, meaning on a weekly basis. That's what it's done. We have filled up every place we've wanted to fill up. And the only night we're taking all reservations full is on Saturday night. And last Saturday night we did 295 people. It is mind-boggling to us the level of activity of this restaurant. This is going to end up being a $5 million restaurant, which is incomprehensible to us. And it's coming right, and it's got very reasonable prices, as everybody who has commented to me, and the food has been spectacular. So it's been great for us. What it really has done more than anything else, Jack, it has brought the suburbanites down. They're there. I'm telling you, you go sit in that restaurant and look outside on Washington Boulevard, and you do not know that you are in Detroit, Michigan. When you hear about all the problems and all this stuff, you don't see any of that.
Well, you rebuild this world-class edifice, part of the fabric of Detroit's history, in the middle of a war zone. Through your eyes, what's that area going to become, John Fritchell?
Well, I have now taken a number of Detroit city officials, George Jackson, a lot of other people, Ann Lang, and I showed them what has happened when Michael has opened a world-class restaurant like he did in Cleveland. And what we're attempting to accomplish, and this was a phrase coined by Liz Simon, Michael's wife. We had the book tower, we had the book Cadillac, we have bookies. This has got to be the book district. So what we want to do is create an entire district of restaurants and entertainment on the first floor and gentrify all the rest of those buildings into housing, into apartment housing. Like I met last week with a wonderful man by the name of Buzz Silverman, who owns three buildings in there, and he's prepared to redo all his buildings, and we're so excited about that. So we're trying to redo that into an entire entertainment area.
John Furchill, you watched Cleveland rebuild itself. Pittsburgh, Buffalo. What should and what will Detroit become?
Well, Detroit has got such a huge leg up on these other cities that I have been in because of the sheer size and money that's in this town. You know, there's still 5 million people in this area, and there's still 30, 40 foundations doing good stuff, and there's still a lot of money that is here. And they have got three casinos. They got a great ballpark. They got an indoor field that brings in, meaning an indoor football stadium that brings in a lot of big events. And then you've got, I assume they're going to redo Cobo Hall, and I know George is working on that right now. So at the end of the day, if you have all this stuff, Detroit is very close to almost, 75% of the population of the United States. I think this will end up as the entertainment capital of the Midwest. More so than even Chicago, more so than any other place I've been, people will gravitate to here. It's no accident that MGM, the second biggest casino, is in Detroit.
We've got the sports venues, the three casinos, the theater district, the musical venues. We've got the Motown legacy. Tremendous.
Tremendous, tremendous. The only thing that I see that keeps this from happening is private agendas, meaning that everybody's got to get on the bus. Everybody's got to go the same place. We got no choice, people. We got to all band together. I'm watching Roger Penske lead this thing with a few other people, this train thing. That's what needs to be done everywhere. Anybody who comes to me, Emmett Moten, whoever's doing development deals, anybody, I help them. I don't care. I want everybody. I don't care what they build. Just get something built down there. And that's what the attitude has to be of everybody.
We're talking to John Furchill, and I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible, presented by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Trust in Us, a world-class executive search firm, presents Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with the chairman and the CEO of the Furchill Group, John Furchill. John, outsiders come here. They see endless opportunities. All of us that are here every day, we see the obstacles. Psychologically, we're depressed. We're mad. We're paralyzed by fear. How do we get over that?
Well, let me start off with that you're really not different than a lot of other the Midwestern American cities, absent Pittsburgh. And I'll talk about Pittsburgh in a minute. But you know, that's kind of the attitude it's in Cleveland. That's kind of the attitude it's in Buffalo. It never was the attitude in Chicago. But Indianapolis has regentrified itself. But the issue is that what's happened in Detroit that's worse than any place else I've been. In Cleveland, they left the city. In Pittsburgh, they left the city. In Akron, they left the city. In Detroit, they abandoned the city. There was really nothing. It was completely abandoned. It was just written off, and there was no reason to do that. And it was also abandonment mentally. I've had this discussion when I've talked to an older person, who comes from the suburbs, and she says, "I've never come downtown." I saw it. I guess you never went to the ballet or the opera. Oh, yeah. Well, they don't consider going to a baseball game or going to Cobo or going to anything as downtown. So you could see that the whole mentality was abandonment. How do you counteract that? It really is down to one thing and one thing only, leadership. I mean, I was watching this town explode when the mayor, Kilpatrick, was there, and he was a great leader and all that. And when all these troubles started, you could see the momentum slow down very quickly. We need leaders. We need business leaders. We need political leaders. And we don't need leaders with a one agenda. We don't need a business guy to say, I got to make sure my business is okay. And we don't need a political guy to say, I got to take care of my politics. What we need leaders to do is say, I got to fix the problem, whatever it takes to get that done. And I see a lot of those people out there. There's more here than some of the other people, but that's what you need to make this thing. You need people to step up and say, I'm going to lead my, and if something's wrong, I'm going to go fix it. I mean, one of the great leaders in this town, and I've gotten to know him somewhat, is Roger Penske. Penske is a guy that really believes, get up, you know, follow me, let's go. And those are the kinds of people that you need to have in here. George Jackson's a great leader, but we need everybody to be a leader to make this work.
You're an entrepreneur, John Furchell. What's next for you?
Well, we're in the toughest economic time I've been in business now since 1977, so that's a little bit over 30 years. I have been through the bad of the 70s and the bad of the 90s. I have never seen anything like this. And it's more the perception than it is the reality. I mean, you know, there's too much information out there. Now, there's too many people blogging. There's too many news commentators who don't know what they're talking about, commenting on something that they have no idea. And all they're preaching is gloom and doom. So what are people doing? They're putting everything in a tin can. There's nothing going on activity-wise. That's got to break. And it's not a Detroit problem. It's a national problem. And then I think after that, what we are doing right now as a company, we are putting together plans to do some very significant projects. And my joke, which went around for a long time, was the bad news is I spent a year and a half looking for a new deal, and I couldn't find one. The good news is I couldn't find one. Could you imagine if I'd have started a deal a year ago and what would happen to it? So we're really in a pretty good position to go forward, but our agenda right now is to enhance the entire neighborhood around the Book Cali because it is the most significant asset we own, which is a $200 million world-class hotel. And that's what we're doing. We're looking at a lot of different projects in there to help people get done, do them ourselves, whatever it takes to create this Book District or whatever you want to call it, Capital Park District. It doesn't make any difference what the name is.
John Furchell, you have a history of willing the impossible to happen. You've said earlier, I'm mentally tough. Can someone learn to will something to happen? Can someone learn to be mentally tough?
I think it gets easier as you get. The answer is, I think it takes a certain kind of person. It doesn't necessarily have to be my kind of person, but it takes somebody who has, you know, I always tell people, you know why developers have massive egos? Because they have to. You have to be able to believe that you can do anything and get it done. And when somebody tells you no, it doesn't really mean no. And those are the traits that go on, and they get to be more, you get to be better at it. That's as you get older. If you look at developers, as they get older, they get better. That's one of the few businesses, well, you know, you got these young lions that know how to do this technology, and, you know, the technology surpasses. A developer, the more, you know, I've been there, I've seen this. I talk about my son. He's a terrific young guy, and his answer is, of course, Dad made all the mistakes, so I know them all already. So it's a really great opportunity, but it takes a certain type of confidence and a certain type, and as you get older, you can get it done.
You've said that the sale starts when you hear no. Explain.
Well, if we would have taken no for an answer on the book, it would have been done on the first day when they hired somebody else as the developer. You know, and we just sat around and see what would happen. And then when we got to the first, you know, I went to meet with the contractors. They gave us the numbers. We looked at them. It's a very funny story. We're looking at all the drawings and all the what is the current development there to assess whether we want to do it or not. And I kept looking at the rooms going, there's something wrong with the rooms. And we figure out when we're looking at them that there's no pipe chase and no airflow chase. So, and I said, well, how are you going to get the air conditioning and the pipes up to service the rooms? Well, you're going to field measure that. Well, how could you lay out a room? You know, so you could see there was fundamental issues. And so that was all the things that we kept running into, problem after problem. And all we just kept saying, we can solve this, we can solve this. And then, truthfully, at the end, we were so far into it, we had to solve it. And that's what it got done. You know, in the beginning, okay, it doesn't work, we'll walk away. But when we got to the point where we had $4 or $5 million in it, you're not going anywhere. You're going to figure out how to fix it.
There's a lot of value in just jumping into the deep water.
That's it.
Don't look back.
You know the old line, Jack, about you're in trouble if you don't have enough money at the bank, and you owe the bank enough money, they're in trouble. So you have to stick with it, okay?
Or a company with the federal government.
That's another story. We'll get to that one day.
All right. Last question. What advice would you give to our young listeners tonight, John Fritchell?
Here's the number one. I have a whole theory on what's going to happen in this country, which is way too long-winded. But the bottom line is the kids that are at the age between 28 and 35, 40 years old, they actually now know that this is not going to be a free ride. I mean, the generations or the people before that, they knew that there was a free ride, and they didn't really have, it would work on its own. These kids know that they got to work. The work ethic of these kids is beyond belief to me. They work as hard as we did when we were that age. And they know, and this is the only advice, there is no quick way to do this. There is no quick buck. There is no quick spin. It is blocking and tackling and working every day hard. That's how it gets done. I mean, my wife says, we got richer than most people, but my husband's hourly rate was the same. And that's probably a very good explanation of it. And all these kids that have made all this money right now in this new dot-com era and all this financial era, that's all coming back to roost right now. It's back to blocking and tackling.
John Fritchell, thanks for giving us the book back. And thanks for being a guest.
Thank you.
Our guest next Sunday will be another man who really believes in Detroit, Dennis Archer. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spahoma.